The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth air.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, everyone. It is February 3rd, Wednesday, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thank you for joining us here for 60 minutes of live news, interviews, talk, comedy, music, and more with Normal Show Live. You can catch us every day replayed on the odd hours between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. Pacific time. Every odd hour, a replay of this or the most recent Normal Show Live. We are so happy to be debuting 14 hours of streaming programming for the cannabis community. On every evening, on every even hour, you'll also get 60 minutes of random Daily Toker tunes, our pod-safe music brought to you by, for, and about the cannabis community from all genres of music. And our co-host joining us from Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. Happy Hemp Day, Hump Day.
Hemp Day, Hump Day, indeed. And everything's going well in Astoria. I saw that it was 55 degrees Fahrenheit up there. Must be breaking out the swimsuits up in Astoria.
We love it. And listen, for the next 4 days, it's 55 during the day and 45 at night. So a nice pattern here on the Oregon coast.
That's a beautiful thing. Carrie comes to us from the website CannabisFantastic.com. She brings us our hemp headlines right after our first break. What are we looking forward to in today's show?
Well, we got a little story from a Mexican former foreign minister and what he has to say about the legalization issue. We're also going to look at the Border Patrol up on the Canada border. They seem like they finally got their gal. And we're going to have a stupid stoner story for you. We like those every once in a while.
Oh, a stupid stoner story. Oh, no. We hate to have to play those. But, you know, we do it for the good of the community to try to teach you how to learn from other people's mistakes. So we'll bring that stupid stoner story coming up in the news. Today, of course, is Irie Wednesday in our Daily Toker Tunes that we bring to you at 20 after the hour. Johnny Reeferseed will be joining us from Iowa. Yes, Iowa, to bring us the latest reggae tune that he has dug up for today's Daily Toker Tunes. At the bottom of the hour, 30 after, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our regular Wednesday segment, Cannabis Science, where he takes your questions on the science, medicine, history, and culture of marijuana. And we get them from the chat room, and we ask them live, and you can get the answers. You know all about Dr. Mitch. He writes in the Ask Dr. Mitch column in High Times. He's also a noted researcher, author of 3 books on marijuana and culture and medicine and society. And boy, if you've got a question, Dr. Mitch is the guy who will be able to answer it. Check that out at the bottom of the hour. And toward the end of the show, I'm going to give you my take on something a little outside of our regular cannabis community, and that is the recent Supreme Court decision in Citizens United versus FEC and what that could mean for the future of marijuana legalization in the United States. But before we get there, we got to take a break.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanton.
We'll be right back.
Kansas Foundation, THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
In an interview on CNN on Tuesday, former Mexican former foreign minister said the United States and Mexico should both legalize marijuana in an attempt to break the power of the Mexican drug cartels and end the spiraling violence south of the border. Jorge Castaneda says that the marijuana should be legalized in both countries and says that the DEA, yes, says that 60% of the Mexican drug cartel's profits come from marijuana, saying if we want to start with that, it's a pretty big chunk. We can't do it overnight, and we can't do it in Mexico if the U.S. doesn't do the same thing. Castaneda strongly criticized Mexican President Felipe Calderon for declaring war against the drug cartels that has cost almost 17,000 lives since he took office in December of 2006, including the now 16 students who have died in what is thought to be a drug-related massacre just this weekend. He says that many Mexicans do not see more deaths as a successful strategy. Mexico is paying an enormously high price because of the aggressive approach of the Calderon government, who sent 45,000 military troops to help overstretched police departments fight the drug cartels. Mexico's Consul General in New York, Ruben Beltran, disagrees with Castaneda, saying that the Mexican government is not going to relinquish its duty to confront organized crime, and he sees legalization as a surrender. Meanwhile, over 900 people were killed last month in Mexican border towns, a new and tragic monthly record.
Oh, my God. You know, this I like that this official is calling for the United States and Mexico to both legalize cannabis. I don't think it goes far enough. I think we need to legalize it galactically. Absolutely, yes. But seriously, he's absolutely right when you look at how this is going to have to make any difference to the Mexican drug cartels. We're looking right now at California as being possibly legalizing marijuana in the November election by initiative. Massachusetts has a bill for marijuana legalization. Doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere. Same with New Hampshire. So we're all looking at California. But remember, just when California legalizes, that means there's still 49 other states that are more likely to be the demand states for the Mexican brickweed. I mean, California's not hurting for good bud. So it's not a lot going on there as far as the Mexican cartels. It's all coming into the central states, and all the most repressive marijuana states are the ones that are, you know, funding these Mexican drug cartels. And, you know, we're more than happy to grow our own. Really, we will gladly put the Mexican cartels out of business. But, you know, Carrie, this comes back to something I talked about when I did my interview with CNN Radio's Cultural Distortion on Sunday, and they talked about the war on drugs, and I said that's part of the problem, is that we're locked into this frame of war. And when you're locked into the frame of war, you can either win or you can lose. You can either fight or you can surrender. You're either tough or you're weak. That's the only comparisons that work when you're in the frame of war. If you're in the frame of healthcare, on the other hand, there's results and there's not results. There's die or live, right? And so if we were to reframe this stupid war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs as a healthcare issue, then we could make some more intelligent decisions about how we regulate drugs and how we treat people who have problems with drugs and still allow adults to make adult decisions.
The U.S. Customs and Border Protections has arrested a 74-year-old woman on a drug warrant that is 3 decades old. Homanella Cole is a Canadian citizen from the city of Hamilton, a port city on the western end of Lake Ontario. She went to the Lewis-Queenston border crossing in Lewiston, New York, on Tuesday to apply for a criminal waiver that would allow her to enter the U.S. as a visitor. Cole had a previous criminal conviction in Canada and wanted a waiver to enter the U.S. for a short visit, a practice not uncommon according to U.S. Customs. Officials say that Cole was at the bridge to apply for the waiver when the U.S. Border Patrol agents found a problem. While U.S. officials were processing her request, they discovered she had an outstanding warrant from April 1, 1980. The New York Police Department had charged Ms. Cole with possession with the intent to distribute marijuana nearly 3 decades ago and still had the outstanding warrant listed as active. She was arrested on the spot, and the 74-year-old is now in the custody of the New York State Police and is being extradited to New York City to face the long outstanding charge.
This is ridiculous. Oh, my God. Okay, so a 30-year-old warrant for marijuana, and we're going to take the 74-year-old Canadian granny and lock her up. Yeah, that the streets are safer now. We all feel safer now. And this just outlines something that Americans need to know about traveling back and forth over the Canadian border, especially as the 2010 Olympic Winter Games are taking place just north of us, about 6 hours north in Vancouver, British Columbia. Folks, you got to realize when you're traveling by air or by, I think by boat or by air or no, by land or by sea, you have to have this new identification card, passport type card, easy pass card and so on. The border is getting stricter and stricter, especially with regards to people who might be involved in medical marijuana. If you are a medical marijuana patient from here out in the West Coast, Montana, Nevada, Colorado, and you're traveling to Vancouver for the games, do not let it be known that you are a medical marijuana patient. Do not let your medical marijuana cards be seen in your wallet. And this goes for Canadians who are under Health Canada's medical marijuana plan. Do not let the U.S. officials know that you are a medical marijuana patient. I have read too many emails from too many Canadians and too many Americans who have told me about problems they have at the border just for their status of being a medicinal cannabis patient. So everyone, be very, very careful, and check out CannabisFantastic.com for more news on the 74-year-old Canadian woman. Carrie, will you have links or ways for people to contact or help or get more information?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I also wanted to say about the Canadian crossing, it just reminded me of the story of Mark Emery's wife.
Yes.
He's going to come over here for 5 years, and because she's an activist, they probably will not let her cross the border to see him for 5 long years.
It's just ridiculous. The things that happen in the name of this stupid war on drugs, that's why we're here every day fighting for it, not just for those of us who enjoy marijuana and cannabis culture, but also for this entire country, for the United States of America. The Bill of Rights has been shredded by this war on drugs, except for the Third Amendment. We still have the Third Amendment. They're still not forcing you to quarter British soldiers in your home. But other than that, every single amendment in the Bill of Rights and a lot of the other amendments have been trashed by this stupid war on drugs. That's why we're here.
Stupid stoner stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Yes, this one fits the bill. This comes to us from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A California man who became unruly on a cross-country flight on Sunday is being charged in federal court with interfering with the flight. Kinmen Chan of San Francisco was flying from Philadelphia to San Francisco aboard a U.S. Airways flight when he began acting strangely. At first, he was waving and smiling and making odd gestures to a flight crew member, according to the criminal complaint. Then he went to the restroom on the plane shortly after it took off, and he began screaming. When another crew member knocked on the door, Mr. Chan came out with his shirt untucked and his pants down. All of the restroom compartments were open. The crew member attempted to get him back to his seat, but Mr. Chan became aggressive and attempted to hit a female flight crew member. She was able to dodge him, but then she grabbed his right arm, locked it behind his back, jumped into the seat behind him, and put him in a chokehold to restrain him. Mr. Chan, who was traveling back from a conference in the Dominican Republic, admitted causing the disturbance and told agents he had eaten marijuana cookies while waiting for his connecting flight in Philadelphia. He told them that he did have a medical marijuana card, but he took double his normal dose.
It was the cookies that turned me into a naked lunatic on the plane. It was the marijuana cookies. I don't even have an intelligent, witty comeback for that story, Carrie.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. First of all, let's let everyone know that when you're using marijuana, I guess I'll go with this angle here. We'll go with the edibles angle, okay? When you are smoking cannabis, it is different. It's a different effect you get than when you are eating or ingesting cannabis. That is, the way that THC is processed through the lungs and then into the bloodstream is different than the way it's processed through the stomach and then into the bloodstream. When you're smoking marijuana, you are getting the active ingredient delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or delta-9 THC, or for short, THC, right? But THC as a molecule has different forms. There's different forms it can take. The delta-9 THC is pretty psychoactive. It's the part that gets you high. And anyone who's ever had a Marinol pill that is all THC and none of the rest of the constituent parts of a marijuana plant can attest to the fact that the THC itself is very, very psychoactive. In fact, when you're using raw plant marijuana, you're also getting cannabidiol and some other cannabinoids that are shown to be anti-psychoactive, and they kind of balance out the THC. You know, a lot of growers like to grow the ratio of the strain to be higher THC for more of a head high, or a higher CBD ratio for more medicinal effects. But when you ingest marijuana, when you eat it in your stomach in a pill, or if you are in a tincture, you know, or if you're eating an edible, a cookie like this man did on the flight, the delta-9 THC in your system is converted to 11-hydroxy-THC, a different form of the molecule, which is far more psychoactive. I don't have a number for you, but it's much more psychoactive. That's why when you're taking the Marinol pill, it's such a bad high because it's of its extreme psychoactive effects. So that's, I guess, what I can give you there for that particular part.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, it's time to check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which we bring to you at normal.org/calendar. You can get all the information on your Normal chapters and what's happening there by visiting our calendar. First of all, on Thursday, February 4th, Cleveland Normal is having their February meeting. For more information, check out clevelandnormal.org. University of New Hampshire Normal is having their meeting as well at the MUB Center. And Philadelphia Normal is having their meeting. They have them always on the first and third Thursdays of the month. Check out phillynormal.org. On Saturday, February 6th, there's also a Normal meeting for Miami Valley Normal of Ohio in Cincinnati. Check out mvnormal.org. Kansas City Normal is having a meeting on Saturday, kcnormal.org, or you can call 888-KC-NORMAL. Kansas City Normal would also like you to know about the Winterfest 2010 that will be taking place on Saturday with plenty of bands, and they will be there tabling and getting the information out for the community. On Monday, February 8th, the Southwest Michigan Compassion Club will be meeting to help medical marijuana patients in the state of Michigan. Check out our website, normal.org/calendar, for details. Canna Bob in the chat room wants me to tell folks about pittsburghnormal.org, pittsburghnormal.org, for more in Pennsylvania. And finally, on Tuesday, February 9th, Joplin Normal will be having their monthly meeting in Joplin, Missouri. Check out joplin-normal.org. For more information. All right, folks, well, it's time for us to take that special break, and those of you out there on the East Coast, it's going to be an extra special break for you. When we come back, your Daily Toker tunes some reggae music for Irie Wednesday.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would say to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reaperseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune. All right, we're going out to Johnny Reaperseed out there in Iowa, and is everybody Irie in Iowa?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's about 35 degrees, so it's like the tropics up here.
Oh, 35 degrees. My goodness, it's time to get the shorts on.
That's right.
What do we have on tap today for our great reggae music?
This is one that I was over at the Rev Ray Green's house last night.
Yeah.
I heard this song, and I was like, I have to play that on the show tomorrow. It's a band called Israel Vibration. They're originally a trio, which included three close friends from childhood named Cecil Skellenspence, LaSalle Wiss Bulgin, and former member Albert Apple Gabriel Craig. Coming out of the late 70s with a harder twist on the vocal trio format, Israel Vibration used dissonant singing to get their socially conscious message across. Having met his sufferers at a polio institute, this trio knew that what the hard life was about. Often coming on stage with a variety of canes and crutches. Their capable backing is usually provided by the impressive dub ensemble Roots Radics, who lay down heavy rhythms for the sad falsetto harmonies and Bob Marley light lead vocals. His Vibes, or I Vibes, they are known to their song supporters, have one of the best live shows around, thoroughly entrancing their ganja-loving audience with tales of jaw, unity, and culture, tightly packaged into one of reggae's most haunting trinities. And as I read that, my cats were fighting in the background. Sorry about that.
That's live radio,
anyway,
man.
Today's toker tune, today's toker tune, Herb is the Healing, is from Israel Vibration's 2007 release, Stamina. You can hear more from Israel Vibration at myspace.com, I-S-V-I-B-E-S, or myspace.com, is Vibes. And you can download them on iTunes. They've got a lot of CDs on there. So I guess I'm going to listen to this and get healed.
All right, Johnny, thank you for bringing this tune. This is Israel Vibrations, and Herb is the healing. But you knew that, didn't you? Talk to you next week. Thanks, Johnny.
All right.
It's written right here, it's absolutely clear that ganja herb is the healing of the nation. So don't have no fear, and always be here. It will be here for enough generations. Yeah, they want you to feel tipsy derby. Upon the children's face, they pick him up, they link him down, and appetite to run him down. The ganja man coming right back. A piece of us in calling bowl, you chop it down, you burn it down. The ganja plant coming right back. Using the science, laboratory resource. Many illness, they call it herb cure. So why don't you give I and I the permit? Oh, yeah. So I and I can go on and burn. Rain come falling, make the ganja grow, and the sun come shining, the breeze the falling too. You pick him up, you lick him down, you up it like you run down. The ganja man come right back. Using your sense, love your resource. So many illness, they call it herb cure.
Music from Israel Vibrations. Herb is the healing. We all knew that, though, didn't we? Having fun with the new technology here at Normal Show Live. Glad you're enjoying it, enjoying my fun here. flipping around the different camera angles and such. Remember, also, Normal Show Live is a channel. You can catch us from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day with replays of this show on every odd hour Pacific. Now, I want to give a special gift to the viewers on the webcam right now. I've talked about a Normal ad that is going to be debuting in Times Square. Should be up, I think, this week and running through February and March. It's a little 15-second piece. We're trying to get it to run at 20 after the hour. And it's going to be on that huge 26-foot by 20-foot electronic billboard between 7th and 8th on 42nd Street. And it's just a 15-second little flash ad. There's no audio to it, so I'll describe it as it's playing. But I'm going to bring up that media source here, let people see this new ad. It's so cool. We call it the Money Tree ad. It begins with a tree that appears and then all these pot leaves that suddenly appear with dollar signs on them and the saying, money can grow on trees. A big pot leaf then appears and says, legalize marijuana, billions in taxes, and then the big logo for Normal, working to legalize responsible use. And that's what we're doing here at Normal Show Live. Now, coming up next, we're going to have you Dr. Mitch stick around. Marijuana.
Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana, it's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
Every Wednesday, we're joined by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a professor of psychology at SUNY Albany. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Oh, hey, thanks. I need to send you a new photo. Look at my hair in that thing. That's hilarious.
You know, I picked that one off. Where did I get that from? But it was an all black background. And so the shading of the feathering kind of makes the hair look a little weirder than it should be. So, yes, please send me a new photo. We'll get a you didn't know we'd be on video this soon, did you?
Exactly.
Well, before we get into the questions,
hey, I wanted to just say happy birthday a little early and plug that you're going to be on the CNN show.
Oh, yeah. But that was last weekend.
Oh, duh.
Well, there we go. But thank you. I appreciate everything. The CNN show went great. It was on cultural distortion. If you go to blog.culturaldistortion.com, I think it might be a .org, but if you go up there, they've got the blog and they've got the downloadable podcast. I come in about 35, 40 minutes into it. It's about a 30-minute interview. It went really great, and thanks for mentioning that. Before we get to everyone's questions, because there's always a ton of questions that we get through the chat room, I was wondering if there's any new studies or news about cannabis science, history, culture, or medicine that you'd like to break here before we jump right into the questions.
What's funny is I'm actually getting emails about some of the old cannabis users back in the day. I realize everybody is always eager to learn about the founding fathers. It turns out that, yes, Thomas Jefferson did grow hemp, as did George Washington. I don't have evidence that they actually smoked a bowl. One person emailed me with a reference to Jefferson's diaries. I am combing through them, but I'm not finding
the thing where he says he actually sat down with a pipe full of hemp. If anybody really knows a real reference, by all means, I'm all ears, but so far, no such luck.
Yeah, that's been rumored around for a long time in cannabis circles, you know, with the George Washington diaries about separating the male from the female plants, and people say, aha, well, he's trying to get female plants. Well, maybe, maybe not. You know, it's hard to tell. With Jefferson, too, wasn't there that story of him sending a emissary to China kind of secretly to get a special brand of Indian hemp seed that wasn't available?
That looks like it's really the case, but I think he just wanted, you know, better hemp. Like,
yeah.
Separating the males and females is probably for, you know, getting longer, stronger strands, and same for Jefferson's quest for new seeds.
Okay. Well, let's go to the chat rooms here. We've got a few questions that are lining up, and Carrie is cutting and pasting them as fast as she can for us. First one comes from our music editor, Johnny Reeferseed, who brought us that great reggae tune we just listened to. And it has to do with medical marijuana, and wants to know, basically, does cannabis relieve the tremors from Parkinson's disease?
We're seeing interesting data on cannabis and tremors more generally. So probably not for, say, Huntington's chorea or some of those disorders. But for Parkinson's, the data are actually quite impressive. And sometimes, you know, there are strong individual differences in how this works. But when you actually see it happen, it is so astounding to see someone with Parkinson's, you know, decrease their tremor in reaction to that. And, of course, as we've mentioned before, the cerebral palsy case studies are also quite impressive in that folks can use really small doses of sativa-type strains and decrease their tremors pretty dramatically.
Amazing. All right. I've seen that, too, with the medical marijuana patients that I've helped here in the state of Oregon. I happen to know a woman who is a graphic designer, does a lot of work with flash animation and so on, and she's got multiple sclerosis, and she just says, you know, I just could not work without cannabis. You know, my hands would shake too much for me to do my job. So, yeah, I've seen those results as well. Let's move on to another question here from Chad, who is asking, does marijuana raise the risk of neck and throat cancer?
So this is a controversial one. There was a study that came out a couple years ago saying head and neck type cancers were elevated in folks who used cannabis, and then a subsequent study failed to replicate that. I want to emphasize that if it really is happening, it's probably from smoke and not from anything cannabinoid related, because we're seeing consistent evidence that THC and other cannabinoids have sort of anti-tumor properties. So I think, you know, my usual soapbox about the vaporizer may be appropriate here. So even though the data aren't really impressive on head and neck cancers, with just one study saying yes and one saying no, the use of vaporizer may sidestep this if it really is a problem.
Okay. Orange Buggy wants to know, how can medical marijuana can help sleep apnea? And maybe an explanation of what sleep apnea is.
Sure. So sleep apnea is really the problem of essentially failing to breathe correctly during sleep. So folks end up essentially stopping their breathing in the middle of sleep. And as you can imagine, this has a whole lot of potential problems with, you know, suffocating and things like that, but also just leads to less restful sleep. We've seen cannabis improve sleep quality, and both THC and cannabidiol may contribute to that, but there's no systematic work on apnea per se. The mechanisms behind it are not clearly mapped out. I'm open to the idea, but I'm not sure that would be the first move. Physicians tend to look at things like, you know, how obese are you, all these other potential contributors, so there might be some more quick-acting ways to intervene on that.
Okay. Question here from Eve Ryan. How can I convince my mother that cannabis will help her fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue? And maybe, I guess, just address, how does cannabis help fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue?
The clincher on this, and I may need to write a children's guide to marijuana, much like the parents' guide,
really,
is just letting your mom know that some of the things she may have learned in the past are worth discussing. If she's not necessarily the kind of person who would sit down with my book, Understanding Marijuana, she might be willing to bounce ideas back and forth with you about what are her concerns about it. She may have grown up at a time when, you know, marijuana was likened to heroin, and by presenting, you know, slowly and clearly some of the evidence that cannabis is in fact markedly more harmless than a lot of the drugs she's probably already taking, that can be a wonderful first step. I think the clincher here, too, is, you know, putting the relationship first. This is a very loving act you're trying to do, and emphasizing that this is all about how much you love her and how you want her to feel better, first and foremost. Even if the conversation doesn't turn into her trying the cannabis, you have a wonderful, you know, lovey-dovey experience with your mom, and you really can't go wrong. As far as the mechanisms behind this, the chronic fatigue data are tough because chronic fatigue symptoms show up in a whole lot of different disorders, including, what's surprising, clinical depression. We've seen some interesting things with that in cannabis. And as far as some of that works, we're still finding out. Looks like that Epstein-Barr virus might be involved, but some folks who have the virus don't have the symptoms. So we're still investigating.
We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, professor of psychology at SUNY Albany, in our cannabis science segment here. If you don't get your chance to get the questions in on chat, you can always send your questions to 420research@gmail.com. And I'll echo some of what you were saying, Dr. Mitch, about the need for the children's guide to marijuana, because there's so many of the young people now who have gotten the internet and gotten some realistic education about cannabis and medical marijuana, and so many of the older generation who still believe the reefer madness lies. A story that came to me here with regards to this had to do with Madeline Martinez and her mother, and trying to convince her, I guess she's in her 70s or 80s, mother that she could use cannabis. And one thing that was helpful in that argument was to get away from the idea of smoking or even vaporizing and moving on to these little greenies, which are little cannabis pills, you know, little like keef in a gel cap. And her mother was much more comfortable with that, being able to take that, and found it was relaxing, and she was able to have more flexibility in her joints and able to sleep better and less chronic pain. So maybe just the root of ingestion might be something to look at as well.
That's a great idea. And, of course, everybody loves Madeline. So, I mean, she could talk me into swallowing a pill full of anything.
Here's a question that has been asked by a few people in the chat room, brought up by Rola J. And that is, I heard cannabis raises the blood sugar for people with diabetes. Is that true?
In fact, there's no published data on this. And given the increase in appetite and craving for sweets, this has backfired on a number of folks I know. So I can't say that this is an optimal treatment for diabetes. If something's been published on this recently, I will definitely look and find out and bring it to the listeners soon.
But what we know so far, nothing to that.
No go.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a question from up in Alaska, I believe. I'm checking out the username. Can't read it very well, but says, should I eat or smoke marijuana for asthma or insomnia?
The insomnia data are quite impressive. And so I think that, the first line of defense against insomnia is usually behavioral stuff. Make sure you're using your bed just for sleep and sex. Make sure your room is completely dark. Make sure you go to bed at a regular time. Exercise regularly. Don't have caffeine in the afternoon. All of those things are a great first step. If that's not doing the trick, you know, and you really give it a fair shake, then certain strains of cannabis seem to be helpful. But I need to caution that not all strains are appropriate for that. And there are certainly some sativas that will keep you up all night. So you're going to have to, you know, count on your provider to let you know if that's the case. As far as the other disorder, what was that?
Asthma.
The asthma data go all the way back to old Shen Ang in 2800 BC in China, and he suggested that orally administered cannabis would improve asthma. As you can guess, we don't have systematic randomized controlled trials here in the modern times. So I can only say it's been recommended before, but you know, smoking and asthma clearly aren't going to be a great idea. Perhaps vaporizing or a small edible dose would be the way to try it out.
Yeah, I can relay the story of Miss New Jersey 2006, Georgine DeMaria. She's an asthma patient, and she uses cannabis to control her asthma. She, of course, also worked with the American Lung Association and doesn't recommend smoking in any way, but she's a big proponent of vaporization. And given that that cannabis is a bronchodilator and tends to relieve seizures, and asthma is a type of a seizure disorder, wouldn't it make sense that this would be a promising treatment?
Again, the mechanism isn't completely clear, but the anecdotal reports are quite compelling.
Okay. Question here from Kansas City Normal asking about putting together bills, you know, legislation for medical marijuana, and whether or not sleep disorders should be something that should be included in those bills based on the science.
I feel like there's a great review on the cannabinoids and sleep that would support the idea that sleep disorders, including insomnia, should be one of the ones that would count. And if those guys want a copy of that review, have them just email me and I'll send it along.
All right. Email Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. Question here now goes more into, I believe, the chemistry of marijuana. I hope you can get this one from Apparatus Beats, who's asking, can you explain how solvent hashes are harmful CO2 hashes? I guess he's talking about how there'd be increased CO2 in hash made from any sorts of solvent mechanisms.
The bottom line on this, and I take a lot of heat for suggesting this, is not all solvents are good for us. And so there are ways to make hash that are relatively organic, shaking trichromes off of, you know, big plants and just pressing them together while you're sitting around with your friends. That's not going to be a huge problem as far as creating exposure to noxious chemicals. Unfortunately, particularly some of the processes that are used underground to make hash oil are not always this clean, and some of the solvents are essentially toxic, and if they aren't washed away appropriately, they are going to create exposure to some troublesome compounds, and I can't recommend that. I know I offend some people when I say this, but the bottom line is, because we have an underground market, it's not regulated, we just don't know what solvents are used, and we're stuck having to say, let's go with the safest things we can.
Yeah, Vapor King in the chat room is talking about the bubble bag method of making hash with ice extraction, and something I've done a couple of times with the big buckets and the drills and the multiple bags. It's a lot of work, but that seems to be an organic and safe way to go there. Email me at...
Well, you're not adding anything extra, and that's the key.
Yeah, email me at stash@normal.org. I have a little presentation that I made up probably 3 years ago for the Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards on bubble hash, and I'll let folks have a copy of that. We got time for maybe one more question here to get to. This one, I don't have a name on it, but it's just asking about using marijuana to combat nicotine addiction. How can I combat cravings that seem to be more when he's using the cannabis? I guess maybe the smoking of cannabis reminds him of the action of smoking tobacco. Maybe just a general discussion on using marijuana to combat nicotine addiction.
Again, I'm not a huge fan of any pharmaceutical interventions for decreasing craving to tobacco. And what I'm finding works markedly better are some mindfulness-based meditation-type approaches for surfing the urge, as my friend Alan Marlatt at University of Washington calls it. Everybody understands how a craving can ebb and flow, and if you don't give in, it feels like, oh, I'm never going to get through this, but in fact, it only lasts so long. So any kind of distractor can go very, very well. Turn on some tunes, sit down and have a nice cold glass of water, do anything that's going to be a distractor. If your current use of cannabis is so comparable to smoking a cigarette that it's turning into an exposure to cues, obviously switching to the vaporizer, using cannabis environments that haven't been paired with nicotine, and turning to oral administration may be the best way around some of that until you feel like you've got a better base of time as a non-smoker to slowly but surely expose yourself to smoking again. But, you know, if you think about the vaporizer, it really doesn't share any of those same cues and would be a nice thing to do for your lungs in general.
All right. And I'll ask the last question here to end the segment. This is something that comes up from people. I see it in the chat room. I see it in email all the time. And it's talking about the use of, you know, the flickable, you know, Bic-style lighters, butane lighters for smoking cannabis and whether or not the butane from the lighter is anything people need to worry about and they should switch to hemp wicks or matches or is the sulfur from the match bad? I mean, all those stories that we hear about what you're lighting the cannabis with, can you just give us the science on that?
All the studies that have been done on this have been tobacco-based, so they're compounded by essentially the impact of nicotine, so I can only interpret so much. But in truth, the butane does get inhaled some. So it is really happening. It's not a particularly toxic thing. You wouldn't want to just suck on the end of a butane lighter.
No.
But it's probably not going to get to you at doses that are critical. Sulfur, same deal. Again, not enough in there to really make it matter. However, I occasionally come by, you know, people who've got, you know, some lit plastic thing that can't possibly be good for you. You know, if you've got a flaming piece of rubber tire, that's not something you want to draw and smoke from. And by all means, again, here's another situation where the vaporizer would be your best friend.
Oh, we love the vaporizer. Dr. Mitch Earlywine from State University of New York at Albany, professor of psychology there and author of many books on marijuana. You've got another book coming out pretty soon. Can you tell folks about that?
Well, the substance abuse treatment guide that came out from the American Psychological Association is my most recent one, and I'm four chapters into this book just on humor that I'm really struggling with. So I'll let folks know when that one comes out. And still, my classic Understanding Marijuana is on sale right now at Amazon, and I believe they had it for $2 off.
Oh, excellent.
The last time I checked.
All right, check it out, folks. Feed your mind. Thank you, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, for joining us here on Normal Show Live. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Oh, well, that was supposed to play another commercial right there, but apparently not. So we're back to live radio. That's what happens sometimes. Welcome back. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your host here for Normal Show Live. And we want to get to some discussion here. There's a topic that many people have emailed me about that is not a direct topic that has to do with marijuana or legalization, but it may have everything to do with marijuana or legalization, and that is this recent decision by the Supreme Court in the case of Citizens United versus FEC. What this case came down to, this was originally a case about a movie about Hillary Clinton that this Citizens United, this AstroTurf front group, wanted to run during the election. And it was getting picked up on a number of right-wing stations. And the question was whether or not private organizations, corporations basically, could fund a movie like this, which was, you know, supposed, you know, it was framed as if it were a documentary or a, you know, a movie, let's say, not a campaign ad, but it was clearly, you know, an anti-Hillary Clinton hit piece, and whether or not that counted as political speech and whether or not that should be constrained by campaign finance spending laws. The decision from the Supreme Court, this was a very controversial 5-4 decision, which basically said that, no, not only should that group not be constrained from spending their money on elections, but that no corporation should have any constraints on what they're spending on elections. Basically, what they said is that all those campaign finance laws that limit how much a corporation can give, an upper limit of a few thousand dollars per candidate, are now out the window because, according to our Supreme Court, spending money is the equivalent of free speech. And that if you restrict these corporations from spending as much money as they want on elections, then you're restricting their free speech. So, how does this affect the cannabis community? Well, You know how hard it has been for these past 40 years that Normal's been in existence trying to re-legalize marijuana to, say, get a politician to introduce a bill for even the slightest bit of decriminalization or lowest law enforcement priority, or even medical marijuana. Sometimes we have trouble getting these lawmakers on board because they're afraid of offending their constituents. Well, what do you think it's going to be like when their constituents are only these big corporations that can donate millions and tens of millions of dollars either to their ad campaigns and their general election campaign, or to their opponents' ad campaigns and general election campaigns? What do you think is going to happen to the next politician who wants to stand up and say, the war on drugs is an utter failure, and I think we ought to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws, like Barack Obama said in 2004? What do you think is going to happen to that politician the minute that Pfizer, or the minute that GlaxoSmithKline, or the minute that Johnson & Johnson is thinking about who they should donate money to for their next election? Are they going to donate it to the guy who says we ought to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws, that maybe we ought to allow people to grow a houseplant in their own home to treat their medical ailments? Or do you think those big corporations are going to give their money to the other candidate who stands for big pharmaceuticals and the status quo and keeping things the way they are in this country? You thought re-legalization was tough before. You ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till we start having to fight against these millions and millions of dollars pouring in from all these corporations to do everything they can to maintain the entrenched power structure of the prison, pharmaceutical, and criminal industries that are maintaining marijuana and other drug prohibition. However, I do think there is some light at the end of this dark tunnel of a decision in Citizens United versus FEC. And that light is shining in California. For a long time, when I was discussing the possibility of re-legalization of marijuana, I always focused on California, ever since 1996 when they passed Prop 215, and of course, being the state that seems to be the most cannabis-friendly state in the union. Currently, the Gallup polls are showing 56% of the, I'm sorry, California field poll is showing that 56% of the people in California support re-legalization, 60% in the LA basin. And so, as that was happening, as medical marijuana was developing in California, and as the dispensaries began to rise up and become these big, profitable industries, yes, I know they're supposed to be nonprofit collectives, come on, as they began to make more and more money, I was very afraid that the rise of these dispensaries would lead to an entrenchment of medical marijuana to the detriment of the legalization for everyone. For why would a dispensary owner want to legalize for everyone and make the prices plummet when he could keep the prices high for just his select clientele? Well, I've been proven wrong, and I'm glad to have been proven wrong on this one, by Richard Lee at Oaksterdam University and many of the other people, many of the other dispensary owners around California who are ponying up big bucks to try to legalize, re-legalize marijuana for all of us. Richard Lee's put in millions of dollars and will probably be tens of millions of dollars by the time this thing is all over to try to re-legalize marijuana in California. They've turned in 700,000 signatures. It's going to be on the ballot in November, and I believe California's going to pass it. So, how does this fit in with Citizens United? Well, if these big corporations have all this money to pour into elections, so do we. So do the Richard Lees and the Stephen D'Angelos of the world and all of these cannabis entrepreneurs in California and Colorado who suddenly are flush with money. They'll have that same money, too, to start investing in the campaigns. They'll have that same money, too, to start buying commercials to promote medical marijuana, to promote marijuana legalization, and to oppose prohibitionist candidates. And this is where we can make a difference, too. You can join organizations like Normal. You can join organizations like LEAP and SSDP, and you can start sending your money in, because really, we can talk about this on the internet all we want. We can write blogs. We can sign petitions all we want. But this FEC, Citizens United decision, has made it absolutely clear that in politics in America, money talks and bullshit walks. So, folks, let's get your money together. Let's do something about this. There has never been a better time in my lifetime or the lifetime of anyone listening to this show to re-legalize cannabis in this country. I know we can do it. And we're going to be here every day, Monday through Friday, fighting, talking, and informing the cannabis community about re-legalizing marijuana and returning America to her rightful hemp heritage. Thanks for tuning in to Normal Show Live. We'll be here tomorrow with more news, interviews, music, comedy, and opinion for you, the cannabis community. And while we're off here for the rest of the show, you'll get some Daily Toker tunes, an hour worth of tunes after the show, followed by replays of this show. Join us at live.normal.org, catch our blog at stash.normal.org, and follow me on Twitter, Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.